This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman is here. Starlink, that's what we're talking over right now. Starlink launched by SpaceX. And finally, to the thrilling announcement from London, there is a competitor, at least the ambition of a competitor, called the Kuiper constellation. Bob, a very good evening to you. What is Kuiper? Who's up to what? Good evening.
Good evening, John. The Kuiper constellation is being developed and built by Amazon, and it's designed to do exactly the same kind of thing, more or less, as Starlink is, provide a constellation of satellites in orbit that would allow someone to have Internet access wherever they are on the globe. Both Kuiper and Starlink were conceived at almost the exact same time, about a decade and a half ago. In the interim, SpaceX fired the initial managers that were developing Starlink, and those were hired by Amazon. And the reason that Musk fired those people was that they were moving too slowly. And so he got a new crew in, they got moving fast, and they've got something like, several thousand satellites in orbit right now. They've got millions of customers, such as John Batchelor, who use Starlink to get access to the Internet worldwide, and they're bringing in so much revenue, it's paying for the development of Starship and Super Heavy, pretty much. That's what SpaceX did. Amazon hired the same people that SpaceX fired, and they've been spending the last decade or so dawdling and moving very slowly, and they launched two test satellites about a year and a half ago. And after they flew for a year and a half, they now have finally launched the first 27 operational Kuiper constellation satellites. ULA used its Atlas V rocket to do this earlier this week. The Atlas V has about 15 launches left on its manifest, but it's retired and not building anymore. But they're using it to launch Kuiper satellites initially. Amazon has to get 1,600 satellites up by next year to fulfill its FCC license. Whether they can get that many satellites launched in that period of time is real questionable, because they're depending on ULA and Ariane Space's Ariane 6 rocket and Blue Origin's New Glenn rocket to do this. And those rockets are all very slow-paced. It's not clear they can get the pace necessary to get those number of satellites up. But at least that's the way they've got their first 27 in orbit. And so we might get a competition to SpaceX, and I hope it happens. But, in this case, the tortoise is not winning the race. There's no question of that, John.
I testify, Starlink is first rate. No problems. Perfect all the time. Fast download, fast upload. And you can use it wirelessly or you can plug it into the machine. So I recommend if Kuiper matches that service, good for Kuiper. However, we move on to, this is commercial space now. Bob specializes in it. He invented it about a dozen years ago in an essay he wrote. What is Axiom, Bob, and what's happened?
All right, Axiom is a space station startup. It's one of the four companies or consortiums that are building private commercial space stations to replace ISS. It's interesting because it has already flown three commercial manned missions, tourist missions to ISS. It has a fourth plan later this year. Just this weekend replaced its CEO. This is actually the second replacement in the last year. The guy who was in charge was actually an interim guy replacing the initial CEO, who came out of NASA. He was actually a NASA manager, and so therefore he structured the company like a old-fashioned big space company. The new guy that's taking over was the chief financial officer of the company. His name is Tejpal Bhatia. I'm pronouncing that wrong. I'm sorry. He was very successful in the company. He brought in more than $1 billion in contracts since joining Axiom, investment contracts. So it appears that they picked him because there have been rumors that Axiom has cash flow problems. And I think they decided to give him the job and at the head to help alleviate those issues. And that could be the case. So they've replaced him and they're moving forward. I should point out that commercial fourth tourist flight coming to ISS in May, it's an interesting flight because it's going to have a Polish, a Hungarian, and an Indian astronaut. That's the passengers. They basically have contracts with three different nations to fly international passengers to ISS. But Axiom is not just doing that. They have signed a deal with a medical company, Burjeel Holdings, to test glucose monitors for people with diabetes in orbit. Now, no one on the flight has diabetes, but having tested those monitors in orbit will make it possible for people with diabetes to fly in space down the road. That increases your tourist customer base. And it's good for ground-based medicine as well, because you're testing glucose monitors in unusual situations. This deal is an example of why private enterprise works really well, because it was able to make this deal very, very fast, and it's going to happen. NASA, this would have been something that NASA should have done on ISS decades ago, but they haven't done it. Because it's a government agency and they work slowly. Here they're going to make it happen fast, and we're going to find out if glucose monitors work and weightlessness drop.
And Bob, this is a trend that you've picked up on. There's another company we've talked about several times that puts experiments in space and brings them back down in a hard landing, I think. I don't recall.
That's right. That's Vardy you're thinking of.
Yes.
They send up a
yes.
capsule. This is a private company. They're not the only ones, by the way, planning to do this. There's a bunch of different short-term capsule companies that want to put up capsules and bring them back to Earth. And while they're active capsules in space, do manufacturing, do testing, do a variety of things, and make money. And so, yes, Axiom is doing this in a different way as it builds a space station or moves towards that space station. But they're not the only ones, not at all. Private enterprise allows for many different people to follow many different ideas, all to make money. And so they should get a lot done very quickly.
All right, we're going to Eastern Europe, Poland, and Maya Space. What is that, Bob?
This is another capitalism space story, John, because Maya Space is a wholly owned subsidiary of the company Airbus, the airplane company. And what Airbus has done is it created this Maya Space division to develop a small rocket as part of its attempt to compete for the business of rocket launching in Europe. And Maya Space, they hope to launch in 26 their rocket. We'll see if that happens. But they have signed a Polish institute at their Institute of Aviation to develop the engines for the Maya rocket's top stage. And so this is basically the Europe trying to develop a rocket and developing it for a subcontract from Poland for the French Airbus company to build this upper stage engine. Whether the launch on time is not the important thing. The important thing is that in Europe, you're no longer centralized to a government-run commercial rocket company. It's now many companies independently competing, and that's a very good thing, John.
What I like about Bob is that we can imagine there is a generation in all these countries that's going into rocket engineering, the young people,
yes,
and hiring in many languages, so that the next generation will explode. This is the fundamentals right now.
Without question, John. I mean, it's what we forget is that once you establish these kind of things, you've created a foundation that does not go away. And so it's all to the good, and it can only accelerate. It's really exciting.
All right, now here's excitement. A 1972 Venus probe by the Soviet Union. Remember them? There will be a test at the end of this conversation. All right. They launched for Venus in 1972. And, well, like a boomerang, right, Bob? What's going to happen?
All right, so the Soviet Union was very successful in landing probes on Venus. It was very hostile, dangerous climate, very thick atmosphere, very hot. But they were able to get probes to land safely and work on the surface for a period of time. They were very good at this. But in 72, one of their Venera probes launched, and it failed. It failed in Earth orbit. It wasn't able to get it out of Earth orbit. And so the lander component of that mission has been orbiting Earth for the last half century, but its orbit is now decaying. It is out of control. You can't communicate with it. There's nothing they can do about it. It's going to land uncontrolled. It's going to return through the atmosphere sometime in the second week of May, and there's no way to control where it'll come down. And there is a pretty good chance, because it was designed to land in the Venus atmosphere, there's a pretty good chance it will survive the landing in Earth atmosphere. So there is a non-zero chance that it poses a risk to those on Earth. We do not know where it'll land. It's in a somewhat high inclination orbit, so it pretty much covers the entire populated areas of the Earth. Fortunately, 70% of the Earth is ocean, so there's a 70% chance it'll land in the ocean. There is a chance it will break up depending on how it comes down. There is that chance. But there is a non-zero chance that this thing poses a slight threat to people on Earth, and we'll have to follow it over the next few weeks, John.
Bob, in writing your books about the astronauts and the cosmonauts, you interviewed a cosmonaut. I'm trying to remember. There was always a joke about the crew that went up with Khrushchev in charge and came down with Brezhnev in charge. You remember that?
Yes, that was the last stunt that Khrushchev put together. He wanted the Soviets to do a three-man mission, put three men into a capsule. So they improvised their Vostok capsule to squeeze three people in. The doctor involved insisted on flying himself because he couldn't imagine risking other people's lives. They could not have any spacesuits to fit inside. They basically imagine trying to squeeze extra people into a tiny phone booth. And they flew up. And while this flight was going on, the apparatchiks in the Kremlin decided, you know, this is enough of Khrushchev, and they fired him. So when it came down, Brezhnev was now in charge, and they didn't do these kind of stunts anymore. They did other kinds of stunts.
And that it reminded me of Venera. Venera went up, and Brezhnev was in charge, and the whole world was going the Soviet way. Now it's going to come down and go, what's happened? Where did the Soviet Union go? Where's the pictures of Stalin? They'll be shocked. I'm anthropomorphizing Venera the way we do for.
You're forgetting though that in the Soviet Union in Russia today under Putin, pictures of Stalin are now honored. Yeah, coming back to that, so it won't be so alien, you know.
Sort of like a mini VG story. Okay, my smartphone apparently knows where I am. Is that right?
Yeah, this is an interesting story I picked up and posted on Behind the Black. For many years, people have assumed that smartphones listen to your conversations. And there was a study done a few years ago that showed pretty equivocally they don't listen to your conversations. There's no evidence that what you say on your phone ends up producing advertisements or other things on your phone. It does not appear they listen to your conversations. But the people doing that study continue to do some research. And they discovered something else that suggests your smartphone is spying on you, but in a different way. It appears that they found this. Approximately 9,000 potential apps that you put on your smartphone out of 17,000 that exist on Android, about 9,000 of them have the capability of taking screenshots routinely of what's on your smartphone and then sending them to third parties. And they have found a significant number of them do this regularly. So this is how they gather information about what you're doing on your smartphone. They take a look at what's on the phone, and they send it to third parties, advertisers and others, who knows. And so just be aware that if you use a smartphone, you are not having any privacy at all, especially with the apps you put on the phone. Almost any app you put on has a very good chance it is going to be spying on you, John.
Bob's,
how joyous.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going to Seinfeld's show, Tom's Restaurant, the 1990s, and now.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information, You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Does Friendly have a taste? If it does, it's probably like Hello's peppermint-flavored anti-plaque and whitening toothpaste. Brush away plaque, show tartar who's boss, and remove surface stains to naturally whiten. Hello's thoughtful and flavor-forward products make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to Hello with the always cruelty-free, never tested on animals toothpaste that's made to spread smiles. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.